coming up next. Minding Your Business, sponsored by Sandler Training, with marketing strategist and author Robin Block. This former New Yorker brings on the tough love to help you separate the gems from the junk and get the job done. Listen and learn. It's real business know-how for today's entrepreneurs. Now, here's Robin.
There's an old Seinfeld episode where nothing is working out for the comedian's short, balding, and bespectacled sidekick, George Costanza. So he decides to do everything different. Instead of always ordering the usual, he goes in the complete opposite direction for some interesting results. Here's Jason Alexander playing George in The Opposite.
Speaking of having it all,
where were you?
I went to the beach.
Oh, the beach.
It's not working, Jerry. It's just not working.
What is it that isn't working?
Why did it all turn out like this for me? I had so much promise. I was personable. I was bright. Oh, maybe not academically speaking, but I was perceptive. I always know when someone's uncomfortable at a party.
Got a napkin over there?
It all became very clear to me sitting out there today that every decision I've ever made in my entire life has been wrong. My life is the complete opposite of everything I want it to be. Every instinct I have in every aspect of life, be it something to wear, something to eat, it's all been wrong. Everywhere.
Tuna on toast, coleslaw, cup of coffee.
Yeah. No, wait a minute. I always have tuna on toast. Nothing's ever worked out for me with tuna on toast. I want the complete opposite of tuna on toast. Chicken salad on rye. Untoasted with a side of potato salad and a cup of tea.
Well, there's no telling what can happen from this.
You know, chicken salad's not the opposite of tuna. Salmon's the opposite of tuna, because salmon swim against the current, and the tuna swim with it.
Good for the tuna.
George, you know, that woman just looked at you.
So what? What am I supposed to do?
Go talk to her.
Elaine, bald men with no jobs and no money who live with their parents... Don't approach strange women.
Well, here's your chance to try the opposite. Instead of tuna salad and being intimidated by women, chicken salad and going right up to them.
Yeah, I should do the opposite. I should.
If every instinct you have is wrong, then the opposite would have to be right.
Yes. I will do the opposite. I used to sit here and do nothing and regret it for the rest of the day. So now I will do the opposite and I will do something. Excuse me, I couldn't help but notice that you were looking in my direction.
Oh, yes, I was. You just ordered the same exact lunch as me.
My name is George. I'm unemployed and I live with my parents.
I'm Victoria. Hi.
That was a clip from the Seinfeld episode The Opposite, with Jason Alexander playing George Costanza. If it were only that easy. But if you're having trouble with your business now, whether that's because of the economy or the season or one of the many things that can throw you off course, you've got to take a new direction. In today's business parlance, you need to pivot. And that means being creative in your approach to the problem. On today's show, we'll be speaking with someone who has placed creativity at the center of his career in business. Bill Stanton, executive producer of the Seattle Comedy Sketch television program that helped launch the careers of many recognized names in entertainment, like Joe McHale and Bill Nye the Science Guy. He'll be speaking with us about how showbiz and creativity can be used successfully in even the most uncreative businesses. But first, we'll take a look at some recent information about small business lending and venture capital. Stay with us for this and more here on Minding Your Business. Minding Your Business is about giving you the tools and information you need to start, run, and grow your small business. Are you starting one? Do you own a business? Tell us about it or email info@mybmedia.com. According to the Wall Street Journal this week, there have been signs, however small, that more banks seem to be loosening the purse strings for small firms. For example, the Thomson Reuters PayNet Index reported that small business lending hit a four-year high in November. The total volume of small business financing increased by 18% over the same period last year and reached the highest level since February 2008. And fewer small firms were falling behind in loan repayments. Rohit Arora, chief executive of Biz2Credit, a small business lending broker based in New York, says demand for loans from small firms is picking up as sales improve and businesses become more creditworthy. However, small businesses are still finding it difficult to get loans. A study by Pepperdine University found that more than 60% of small business loan applications last year were denied. According to the National Federation of Independent Business, a Washington, D.C.-based lobby group, most small business owners have given up their search for investment capital from banks due to weak growth prospects and after being rejected for loans multiple times. Optimism still reigns, however. In a recent survey of more than 500 small firms by Shore Payroll, a Chicago firm, one in five said they were planning to borrow to grow their business in the months ahead. Fred Graziano, head of regional commercial banking, government banking, and small business at TD Bank, says while loan demand from small firms is getting stronger, it won't increase significantly until, quote, there's more of a predictable environment. On the investment side of things, it looks like VCs are cutting funding this year, according to an annual survey of the National Venture Capital Association. Here are some key findings from the survey. While 45% of owners expect investment increases next year, only 32% of VCs have the same optimism. That's down from last year. There's also speculation that there was an overfunding of early-stage startups and the bubble could burst soon. More than half of VCs expect a seed and early-stage funding shortage in 2012. 75% of CEOs plan to raise some money, but they anticipate a tough market for funding, even for later stage companies. As for the IPO market and some high-profile debuts, IPO activity stopped entirely from mid-August to mid-October. Less than half of VCs expect the IPO market to increase this year, a 19% decrease from last year's survey. Instead, VCs expect more mergers and acquisitions. There's good and bad news for West Coast firms as well. VCs and CEOs think the startup environment will improve more in New York than in Silicon Valley or Boston. Yet Avalara, the 11-year-old Bainbridge Island company that makes sales tax software, raised $21 million in venture capital in 2011. It was voted the best venture capital deal of the year by readers of TechFlash as part of their 2011 Newsmaker Awards. You're listening to Minding Your Business on Money Radio 1300 KKOL. I'm Robin Block. Here's a clip from Bill Staton, our guest on today's show, giving one of his popular keynotes.
They were together fewer than 10 years. 10 years! I mean, come on, that's nothing. Be honest with me here. How many of you have underwear older than that? About a third. How many of you are wearing it now? They were together fewer than 10 years when they broke up in 1970. So why are we talking about the Beatles today? I mean, really, why do we even care? Especially since there are some people who don't even like the Beatles. I know, but they're out there. I have friends who don't like, people. I know people who don't like the Beatles. There's one guy, Chris, who keeps saying to me, Bill, the Beatles are no longer relevant. This is from a guy who owns not one, not two, but three albums by the Partridge Family. Did you even know they had three albums? But it is a fair question. I mean, come on, nearly 40 years after the fact, why are we still talking about the Beatles? Well, one reason, of course, is because this year, and I have this on good authority, NSA rocks. But if you really want to talk about rock and roll royalty, if you really want to talk about building a successful career, whether you like them or not, the Beatles are the gold standard. I mean, think about this. They broke up in 1970. In 2001, 31 years later, the number one selling CD in the entire world for the entire year was this one. It's a Beatles CD. In 2006, the number one selling CD in the entire world for the entire year was this one. It's a Beatles CD. No longer relevant? I don't think so. Paul McCartney alone is worth nearly $2 billion. And that's after the divorce.
That was our guest today, Bill Stanton, in a speech about the Beatles and how they're relevant even today. I'm not even sure CDs are still relevant today, but we'll be getting to that. You're listening to Minding Your Business on Money Radio, 1300 KKOL. I'm Robin Block. If all the hype about social media is confusing you and it's just taking too much of your time, there's a solution. Social Persuasion is the book that will help you decide if social media is the right tool for promoting your business. From valuable tips about choosing the right social sites to getting the word out to time management techniques, Social Persuasion is the only book on social media created specifically for small businesses. Available in print and ebook on Amazon.
We'll be back with more Minding Your Business with Robin Block after this on Money Radio 1300 KKOL.
Some of you may be familiar with my guest today. Bill Stanton was the executive producer of Seattle's sketch comedy television show Almost Live. YouTube is filled with classic episodes like Vegetable Rights, Ballard Driving Academy, and Middle Management Suck-Ups. The show is now aired in reruns by the Seattle NBC affiliate following Saturday Night Live. During the show's 15-year run, Bill worked with now household names Jerry Seinfeld, Ellen DeGeneres, Joel McHale, and Bill Nye the Science Guy. Bill won 29 Emmy Awards for his work as a producer, writer, and performer. He's also written for HBO, NPR, and The Tonight Show with Jay Leno. Bill has authored 9 corporate training programs in subjects ranging from office politics to customer service to team motivation. His programs are currently being used by hundreds of organizations, from IBM and Boeing to Paramount Pictures and the CIA. Yes, I said the CIA. Today, Bill makes his living traveling the world as a keynote speaker, helping businesses and associations leverage success secrets of the Beatles, as we heard in his earlier clip, and more recently, helping executives to figure out what it takes to lead a creative team. That's going to be our focus today, because if anybody knows anything about leading creative teams, it's the man himself, live here in the studio, Bill Stanton. Welcome to Minding Your Business, Bill.
Thanks, Robin. Live being a relative term.
Well, it's not that early.
No. I'm fine. No, it's not. I'm good. How are you doing?
I'm good. I'm great. So I don't know if this is a question on everyone's minds or it's just on my mind, but why the Beatles and not like Pearl Jam?
Well, it's mostly a function of time. The Beatles have proven themselves. I mean, I think Pearl Jam has also, but the Beatles, by every measure, are the they are the gold standard. There we go. They are the gold standard for success. You know, they critical success, commercial success, and certainly time has proven how successful they were. And it was because they made a lot of good decisions. And that's what I talk about when I do my keynote addresses and seminars and things like that. You know, what is it? Given how successful they were and still are, are there any lessons for the rest of us who are, you know, running our own small businesses? I mean, I'm a small business person myself. You know, is there anything that we can take from their success and make it our own? And I think there are some things.
So give me an example of one or two, if you can think of any.
Okay, well, one of the first things I talk about is the day that John Lennon met Paul McCartney. John was 16 years old, leader of his own little band called the Quarrymen. He meets this 15-year-old kid named Paul McCartney. Quickly finds out that Paul McCartney is a better guitar player, a better singer, at least at the time. And come on, Paul McCartney, the cute one, he's better looking too. So now he's got this triple threat. And he's got this decision to make now. And the decision is, should I keep the spotlight just on me because I'm the star of my own little rock and roll band? Or should I spread the spotlight and bring this McCartney fellow in? Now, most, you and I both know people in their 40s, 50s, and 60s who would not have the confidence to make the decision that John Lennon made. Because most of us get a little intimidated bringing in somebody who maybe might be a threat to our authority down the line or might have a stronger skill set than we do. But John Lennon, at age 16, decided to spread the spotlight, put his own ego in check off to the side, and think about the good of the team, in this case the rock and roll band, and he brought McCartney in, and on that day the Beatles were born.
It's interesting you bring this up, because I was having a similar conversation with someone the other night about how there's a really big difference between confidence and pride.
Yeah.
So there are a lot of people who start businesses. I mean, you have to have a certain amount of ego to start a business.
You do.
Because you've got to have the wherewithal to say, okay, I can do it, and I'm going to go for it, right?
Right.
But you could also have pride and say, well, if I don't know this, I'm not going to allow myself to learn from anybody else who knows something that I don't know.
Exactly.
And it really, you need to be more confident than that. You need to say, I can't know everything. I know what
you
I know
really
know
other,
well.
You everything. And, other people specialize.
Right.
When I was producing Almost Live, one of the smartest things I ever did was hire people who were better than me, better writers, better performers. Maybe not a better producer. That was my strength in bringing people together and then setting them in the right motion. That, we'll talk about that when we talk about how to lead creative teams.
I think a lot of consultants face this problem because you'll speak with the business. I know I do. When you're going out there to consult with someone, it could be a restaurant owner, it could be any kind of business, and they feel that they have to know everything, that they have to understand everything there is to know about business, when in fact they might know everything about food.
Right, right.
But not know anything about business, nor appreciate the fact that that's what you're there for. And I think that can be quite a challenge to
it
break
can
through
be.
That.
You know, I think it's Gerber talks about this in The E-Myth, you know, classic book for small businesses. And that most people start small businesses because they've got a craft they're really good at. They're really good at making shoes. Oh, I'll start a shoe store. I'm really good at baking, so I'll start a bakery. And then you realize that running a bakery isn't about baking. It's about running a business. And that's where it gets really, really difficult. You can't. You might be the best baker on the planet, but not be able to actually run the business.
Or drive customers in your door.
Yeah, exactly.
Or,
because it's a different skill set.
Exactly. Beyond the ability, well, we'll come back to the Beatles later, but I want to talk a little bit about comedy.
Right? Okay.
So beyond its ability to make people laugh, especially in a tough economy, what has comedy got to do with business?
Oh, gosh, where do I start? First of all, business leaders today, you know, whenever they do these surveys of, you know, of what are the most important traits of leadership, one of the highest ones is a sense of humor. It's really, really important because things are going to go wrong. And a sense of humor gives you, basically a sense of humor gives you perspective. And when something does go wrong, you need that perspective. You need that kind of sense of being able to look and go, okay, maybe this isn't so bad. In fact, one of the exercises I do when I'm consulting with corporations about creativity and how humor can help them is a little game that we invented with Almost Live called How Can This Get Worse? I think what happened, we were having one of those days, and we've all had one of those days.
Let me count the ways.
Yeah, exactly. No, we've all had one of those days when things just, you know, I forget what was happening. It was a sketch wasn't coming together or an edit wasn't coming together, you know, whatever it was, just something just wasn't working. And we were all sitting around the round writer's table and just going, oh, this is terrible. And one of the writers, I forget who, said, oh, God, you know, how could this get any worse? Well, when you ask a question like that to a group of comedy writers, you start getting answers. And we said, well, it could be worse by this and this and this. And all of a sudden we started laughing because, you know, you go to extremes. That's what comedy does. And what that did was that completely changed the context in the room. I mean, you could almost feel it from being tense and dark and just tight to being loose and open. And all of a sudden that creates a context in which you can solve your problems a lot more easily. If you can all laugh together at the same problem, even if you've been butting heads about it, if you can laugh together about it, then all of a sudden there's common ground there. That doesn't mean you're going to instantly find a solution, but you're going to be in a better place to find a solution.
Not only that, I would think that it really opens up the lines of communication.
It does.
And you can't really solve anything if everybody is afraid to say what they need to say, if people don't feel comfortable voicing their opinion.
Right, right.
So I think that's – I love that idea. I want to try that.
No, it's cool. And it's fun, too. You know, how can this get worse? And then really sit down and, you know, and –
go to extremes, because that's where it gets funny and that's where it starts getting valuable.
I feel somebody out there is going to say, oh, we need to create an app for that.
Yeah, it's not a bad idea, frankly.
We're here with Bill Stanton of Ovation Consulting, and you're listening to Money Radio 1300 KKOL. I'm Robin Block. If you have ideas or questions for Bill, email info@mybmedia.com. So continuing with this talk about creativity and so forth, what can a business do? I mean, I love the idea of how can things get worse, but what are some of the other things or exercises you use to stimulate creativity in a business?
Well, creativity is really looking at things a little differently than most people do. See, we're all creative, and people tend to forget that. One of the years ago, whoever they are, and I don't know exactly who the study was by off the top of my head, they did a study of creative people versus non-creative people. So they surveyed creative people, dancers, poets, writers, comedians, you know, people like that. And they asked them all kinds of questions. Did you have books in your house growing up? Did you have a pet? Did your parents play a musical instrument? Do you play a musical instrument? You know, all these kinds of things. And then they surveyed a bunch of non-creatives, bankers, lawyers, accountants, whatever, and asked them the same questions to see if there was anything that separated the creatives from the non-creatives. And they found one thing and one thing only, and it was this. The creative people believed that they were creative. And you see how that changed? In believing that, all of a sudden they live on a completely different planet because they see the planet creatively now. And we all have that capability. So it's just a matter of reminding our brains what it feels like to be creative. And we've all read these lists of things that you can do, and they all work. You know, wear your wristwatch on a for those who still wear wristwatches, on a different
with the CDs.
Exactly,
you know, we'll put them together.
Yeah, on a different hand. You know, listen to a different radio station, take a different route to work. You know, things like, you know, put your wallet in a different pocket. So all of a sudden throughout the day you're kind of reminded, oh, this is weird, this is weird, because all of a sudden the brain starts firing. I mean, the synapses actually do fire differently then. And so you start getting creative ideas. There are other exercises as well, but it's really about seeing connections that other people don't see. So here's an interesting one. The next time you have any kind of a challenge in your life, in work, in your relationships, for example, ask yourself, okay, how would X solve this? Yeah. How would a dog solve this? How would, you know...
I love that idea.
Yeah. Like, how would President Obama solve this? How would Britney Spears solve this? And that doesn't mean that you're going to come up with a solution, but it's forcing, by asking yourself questions like that, you're forcing your brain to look at the situation differently. And just by doing that, all of a sudden your brain starts triggering new connections. And that's what it's all about.
It kind of reminds me of the movie Dead Poets Society, where I can't remember the actor.
Robin Williams?
Well, he doesn't get up on the desk. He was the professor,
okay,
right?
Yes.
But Matt Damon, was it Matt Damon? Is that right?
No.
Maybe it was Robin. He gets up on the desk, and he makes everybody stand on their desk. He said, now you're seeing things from a new perspective.
Exactly.
We'll be right back with Bill Stanton.
We'll be back with more Minding Your Business with Robin Block after this on Money Radio 1300 KKOL.
Let's continue the conversation, Bill. I wanted to talk to you about the difference between creativity and innovation. What do you see as the important differences there?
Well, first, in a nutshell, creativity is coming up with original ideas. Innovation is turning them into something that's actually going to be useful. Because great ideas are a dime a dozen, but great ideas that actually make, if we're talking small business, make money, that's completely different. When I was a producer for, you know, a television producer, and it was a comedy TV show, so a very creative environment. So my job was to lead my staff, to lead the creativity in my staff and get creative, funny ideas out there, but then also to turn those ideas into a television show that would get ratings, that would get sponsors and advertisers, and that would ultimately make money for the television station. So that's the innovation part. It's like taking something creative and then turning it into a product, basically turning it into a product that people will buy.
And how would you know what that was? How did you know when you had something that was marketable?
It's really difficult. There is no magic eight ball to let you know that. The reason that Almost Live, I think the reason that I was successful with Almost Live is that my tastes, by and large, mirror the public's tastes. Because, you know, so I would put things on the show that I liked, by and large. And to the degree that what I liked matched what the public liked, the show would be successful. And the show was enormously successful, and so it must just be kind of that match. Sometimes you don't know. I mean, look at Steve Jobs with Apple. I mean, he worked from his gut, and if his gut had been wrong, Apple would have folded. It turned out his gut was right. Now, for every Steve Jobs, how many people are there leading businesses who work from their gut? And unfortunately, their gut's just a terrible judge of what people want.
But isn't it gut plus knowledge?
Like, it is gut plus knowledge. And at some point, once you have enough knowledge and experience, the two become almost indistinguishable from each other. You know, yes, you're going from your gut, but your gut is built from years and years and years of experience,
and
of trial and
too.
Error, new knowledge. And also, if you have enough experience, this is getting into the creativity part, you can see things from different parts. You start to see connections. You know, especially if you worked in different industries or read outside of your industry, the more you do, the more of that you have, the more your brain makes those connections that other people can't see because they don't have that experience.
You have to feed your head. That's what I always tell people. You have to read a lot. You have to read outside your industry. You need to go to a museum every so often.
Absolutely.
You need to listen to music you maybe never heard before. You need to visit places, be in a physical space,
right,
and talk to people of
right,
different ages.
Yeah, you never know. I mean, if you're at a professional seminar, pick one of the concurrent sessions, one of the breakout sessions that you wouldn't normally go to, and go to that one. But go to it with the intention of, what am I going to get out of this? Not with the question, am I going to get anything out of this, but what am I going to get out of this?
Yeah, it's the attitude thing again. If you are open, if you say to yourself, I am a creative person,
mm-hmm,
you will take a creative approach to the world.
Right.
So going in and being open-minded about something you may not have been interested in before,
yeah,
might really just send you in that pivot direction,
mm-hmm,
that gives you a new idea, a new approach to your business that
right,
will make it more successful.
Yeah, yeah, it will.
It also seems to me that you knew how to pick the right people. Like you had Joel McHale, who's now on The Soup, right?
Right,
and
The
he
Soup,
was
and
your...
he's got his own sitcom, the Community, or Community, yeah.
How did you first connect with him?
You know, I don't even remember, but I do know that he was my intern.
Yeah.
So there's nothing quite like seeing your former interns just rocket past you in their career. But, you know, clearly the guy had talent and ability. It was a little bit untapped when we had him on Almost Live. He was a great performer. And I like to think, and I kind of wish when I see him on the talk shows that sometimes he would mention, you know, there was this little show in Seattle that I did, and that's where I kind of learned my chops. But
you have to write to him or something.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, maybe I should do that.
Like connect with him on Facebook.
Yeah. But it really was about finding the right people. And the people that I looked for specifically when I was looking for writers and performers, and they were basically the same because I didn't have the budget to have writers and performers. So I basically hired the best writers I could and then forced them to perform. What I looked for were people who were curious about life, who had outside interests. If it was somebody who just, all I'm interested in is writing comedy, I wasn't interested in that person. Again, because in comedy writing and in business, you never know where the great ideas are going to come from. So to have a little bit of knowledge about a little bit of everything, or at least to be curious about it, you know, I wanted well-read people. I wanted people who were, like I say, curious about life. And that's what you want in business, too. Not in every single position, but you want people who have other interests because they'll bring, they'll be able to tap those other interests for solutions that other people wouldn't see.
You find this great talent,
mm-hmm,
like Joel McHale and Bill Nye the Science Guy,
right,
and that kind of thing. How do you actually lead the talent in the direction you need them to go to actually end up with that marketable product?
That's a real good question. I think it's a question that most businesses really struggle with because they're making a key mistake. See, everybody knows that creativity and innovation are crucial. They're the currency of today's economy, really, because things are shifting so fast and turning on a dime. The only way, you can't prepare for those shifts necessarily. Your best tool is to have creativity at your beck and call. So businesses today and organizations spend a lot of resources, Robin, money, time, energy, trying to attract the most creative people they can and building these great creative teams, this great pool of creative talent, and then they don't know what to do with it. You know, it's kind of like having a Lamborghini and only using it to go to the corner 7-Eleven once a week for milk.
That's so sad.
It is sad, but you've got this great, great resource, and you don't know what to do with it. And the problem isn't so much about attracting creative people. The problem is leading creative people. We put all this energy into attracting creative people and no energy or resources into learning how do you lead creative people. Well, that's what I did for 15 years with Almost Live. And when I first started, I didn't know how to lead a creative team either. I learned along the way. So what I'm trying to do is help organizations kind of shorten their learning curve, because I don't want them to have to go through 15 years of learning this. One of the keys, though, with leading a creative team, I call it, you've got to become a producer. Now, of course, with my background, you'd think I would say that. But it's true. A producer isn't the person who actually does it. The producer assembles the team. In movies, a producer typically is the person who brings a director to a project and a cast to a project, and you kind of assemble.
And the money.
Yeah, and the money. And you assemble this great team, and you give them a direction, and then let them go. See, that's the key. You've got no one to back off as a producer. And as a, I hate to use the term boss, because you don't want to be their boss. Creative people don't want a boss. They want a leader, but they don't want a boss.
So what's the difference?
Well, a boss, in my estimation, a boss is somebody who kind of tries to tell them how to do their job, how to do what to do. Creative people hate that. Creative people live to answer that question of how. You tell them, I want this, and then let them figure out how to do it. I'll give you an example. I mean, because they do want structure. A lot of people don't realize that creative people want structure. They need structure. For example, with Almost Live, when I was doing my TV show, I might say to my creative team, okay, I'm looking for a 5-minute sketch that Michael Jordan can appear in, which is actually an assignment I gave them once because we had access to Michael Jordan. A 5-minute sketch that Michael Jordan can appear in. And then I let them go. I didn't say, oh, and I want it to be this, this, this. No, that's it. So they had those parameters. I set the vision, you know, because I'm the producer, I'm the leader, it's my job. What am I looking for? Very clearly, 5 minutes, Michael Jordan. Go do it.
So you have to give them enough rope.
Yeah.
Not to hang themselves, of course, but to, and then you have to know when to back off. And
yeah.
So if we were to think about this in the context of an engineering firm,
mm-hmm.
let's say, that does software.
Yeah.
And we're not talking gaming, which could be considered more of the entertainment
sure.
side of things. How might you apply that idea?
Well, you figure, first of all, everybody is creative, so you've already got creativity in your existing team. Now, you may want to bring in more and different kinds of people based on whatever kind of challenges you're looking for. But the key is, again, as the leader, you have to define the question. Because, see, just like we were talking about, your brain will answer whatever question you ask, which is why it's good to go into a situation saying, you know, what can I learn from this? Rather, can I learn anything from this? Because your brain will answer whatever question, or at least attempt to answer any question that's put to it. So will your team, by and large. So your job as a leader is to define the question. What is it we're really trying to solve here? Well, a lot of people get that wrong also.
So how do you come up with the right questions? What do you use as your guide?
The guide really is, what is the ultimate end result you want from this? A lot of leaders don't go to the end result. Like, they might say, okay, how can we sell more widgets? Okay, and that'll be the question. And people come, well, we can do this, this, this. But maybe that's not, do you really want to sell more widgets, or do you want to get more profit? You know, selling widgets is just a way to get profit. So, how can we become more profitable? Well, that's a completely different question. See, selling more widgets is just a step to profitability. So as the leader, you've got to be able to see the big picture and say, okay, what is the most important question to be? What's the real question to be asking? And then put that out to the team and let the team come up with answers.
I think a lot of business people say if you can figure out the right question, you'll be able to find the right answer.
I
think that's kind of what you're leading to. But what you're trying to do is work with a team of people that have some creative skill, creative ability, and everybody's creative
right.
in one way
right.
or another.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have to set that tone. You have to find, you know, knowing the business, knowing the climate you're operating within.
Yep.
So you have to be really smart about the context of your business.
You do have to be smart. I mean, running a business takes some smarts. You don't have to be a genius.
And you don't have to be the baker either.
Right, exactly.
As you say, you're the producer. So once you put the right question out, what do you do next?
basically you back off. I liken it to a bowling alley. With a bowling alley, what do you do? As the bowler, you figure out what the goal is, and then you set the ball in motion, and then you sit back and let the ball go. But you're aware of the gutters, and if you see the ball getting too close to one gutter or another, that's when you step in and tap, and that's it.
Okay, we'll be back with Bill Stanton.
We'll be back with more Minding Your Business with Robin Block after this on Money Radio 1300 KKOL.
We've been speaking with Bill Stanton of Ovation Consulting, and you're listening to Money Radio 1300 KKOL. Let's continue this conversation on creativity. So we talked about getting great talent.
Right.
And we talked about, like, giving them enough rope not to hang themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And then we talked about asking them the right question to set them up to mm-hmm. answer that question creatively. And then we talked a little bit about a bowling alley. And you also have talked about something called the playground.
Mm-hmm.
Is that another thing that small businesses can do?
It is, yeah. Yeah, there are actually three steps to effectively leading a creative team. The first one, which we've talked about, is become a producer. Don't be the boss. Be a producer. The second one is build a playground. And as soon as I say that, I can almost see over the airwaves a lot of people going like, oh, do we have to get beanbag chairs and things like that? And I don't mean literally a playground. Although, if that leads to the next million-dollar idea, why wouldn't you consider it? What I mean is that you want to create a context, create an environment where creativity can flourish. You know, we all talk about thinking outside the box. It's hard to think outside of a box when you're sitting in a cubicle.
Oh, tell me.
You know? I mean, it's not impossible, but it's really tough. So we get these people, we put them in cubicles and say, come up with great creative ideas. And that doesn't really work. And there are three ways to think about building this playground, about creating this environment. The first is the physical space. You need to create a space where people can bump into each other because that's where ideas happen. So many businesses have the legal departments on the sixth floor and never interacts with the sales department, which is on the third floor, and which never interacts with this. You need to create an environment not only where each department can kind of move about within itself and bump into each other, but we're different departments. Because again, we talked about creativity is what happens when you see connections that other people wouldn't see.
You know, I've read this recently also that in cities, they feel that the way the buildings are placed and the fact that there are little green areas in between where people can congregate also is a way to stimulate creativity
in a
larger sense. So it's not only the microenvironment of the business itself where you have to have these cross-siloed kind of happenstance things that happen, the water cooler, so to speak, but also external and cross-pollinate between businesses.
Think of the university environment. My brother-in-law is a professor at the University of Michigan, and he's a musicologist. He knows everything there is to know about Beethoven. But when he has dinner parties, he's bringing in, like, physicists and, you know, all kinds of people, and these ideas, you know, they just get ideas off each other, which is amazing. So creating a physical space is important. Creating an environment of time as well. Because you and I both know creativity doesn't start at 9 o'clock and end at 5 o'clock. If you're really...
It doesn't?
No, it doesn't. If you're really leading a creative team, if one of your creative team members comes up with the next $2 million idea for your small business, do you really care if that happened at 8:04 in the morning? Or if that person had to miss a meeting to come up with that idea? You know, creativity doesn't work on a time schedule. And if you expect that, if you're like, no, we clock in at 9, we clock out at 5. Yes, you do need some kind of structure. But if you're so rigid about that, you're not going to get the kind of ideas. You got to figure out, what's the big picture here? Do you want creative ideas that are going to make money for your small business, or do you want to make sure the timesheets are filled out perfectly every week?
So how do you get people who work for you to want to contribute those ideas to your business versus take them somewhere else? I mean, that can be a challenge. How do you get them to want to stay a piece of the team?
Well,
part of the team.
There's a phrase that we hear a lot about, which is getting buy-in. You know, we want to get buy-in from the team. And I think that's only part of the way there. I think what you really want is to get ownership. You want your team to feel ownership in the project. I know when we were doing Almost Live and we would pitch ideas around the table, I always knew when an idea was probably going to make it onto the air. Well, one, because I got to say what made it onto the air. But when all of a sudden other team members, other writers would go, oh, you know what? Tracy could do that with an Italian accent. Or, you know what? What if we shot that this way? And all of a sudden, they're starting to contribute their own ideas, and they're starting to own that sketch, even though they didn't write the sketch. But all of a sudden, they're starting to, oh, what if we do this? And boom, all of a sudden, it becomes the group's sketch. And that's when you know, okay, there's ownership here. Not just buy-in, but there's ownership. So you want to, when you're coming to your team and asking the right question and wanting to get ideas, you also have to ask questions like, okay, how can we collectively own this? What can you contribute to this idea? Or what could the sales team do? Or what could the, you know, so it's about getting ownership. There are no guarantees, of course, in any of this. There are no guarantees in business. But if you can get your team to really have ownership in your challenge, in your project, whatever it is, short-term or long-term, you've got a much better chance of having success with it.
So that's part of treating creative people well.
Mm-hmm.
The whole idea that
you should be treating everybody well, of course.
But I mean, well, this is particularly creative people. And if we're saying all people are creative and so forth, I mean, people want to be compensated financially, of course.
Of course.
They also want to feel that their ideas are being recognized. And, of course, not. Right. I mean, I love how people say, well, every idea is a great idea, which isn't really true.
No, that isn't true.
But at least if people are being heard,
mm-hmm.
and then there is this collaboration and ideas build on each other, it becomes this more tied together with the buy-in and so forth.
And that's actually the number one driver, the number one motivator for creative people. It isn't money. And, you know, we've all heard that. It isn't really money for most anybody. It's that sense of ownership in a bigger picture, ownership in a project, you know, being able to really sink their teeth into something. You know, that's really what drives them. So if you can give them that, why would they look someplace else? You know, it's all about figuring out, okay, what is it that drives your creative people? And if you're providing that, as opposed to saying, no, you have to be here at exactly 9 o'clock and punch this and do this and do this this way and this way and sit in your cubicle and be creative. You know, of course they're going to be looking someplace else. It's about understanding what makes the creative person tick, because the creative people are the ones. And again, we're not just talking about the, you know, here, this is my creative department. But again, if you can get that in everybody, then that's where your multi-million dollar ideas are going to come from. And if you're feeding them what they need and what they thrive on, they're not going to be looking someplace else.
Well, I love that idea, and I wish we could talk more, which we may do at some point, but it looks like we're pretty almost out of time. You've been listening to Minding Your Business on Money Radio 1300 KKOL. I'd like to thank my guest, Bill Stanton of Ovation Consulting. To learn more about the 5 best decisions the Beatles ever made or about Bill's speaking services, visit ovationconsulting.com. For an archive of today's program, links to our guest's website, or to sponsor this show, check out our website at mybmedia.com. Support for Minding Your Business is provided in part by Sandler Training. Learn more at toptiertraining.sandler.com. Tune in next week as we talk about supplementing your income with a home-based business and what to watch out for with internet business scams. From Money Radio KKOL 1300 in Seattle, this has been Minding Your Business, tools and information for the business of your life and the life of your business. I'm your host and producer, Robin Block.
Listening to Minding Your Business, sponsored by Sandler Training with Robin Block. Real business know-how for today's entrepreneurs. To contact Robin, you can email Robin with 2 B's at blockbeta.com. That's Robin at blockbeta.com. Join us again next Saturday afternoon at 1 for more Minding Your Business with Robin Block here on Money Radio 1300 KKOL.